Welcome to Your Career Podcast, the podcast that helps to ensure your career success. To start getting on track with your career, download my free career goals calendar from thecareersacademy.online. My goals calendar includes a SMART goals template and a weekly tasks sheet that will ensure step by step you get closer to reaching your career goals. So download my goals calendar today at thecareersacademy.online. Now on with the show.
We all look and make assumptions as soon as we see somebody, from their age, from their race, the colour of their hair, all of those things. We make assumptions. Now, that doesn't mean we have to be somebody else, because we don't. We want to be exactly who we are. But the most polished version that we can put out there is the best thing that we can do on it, particularly for a LinkedIn profile.
Hi, it's great to have you on Your Career Podcast. I'm Jane Jackson, and thank you for listening. If you're a new listener, why not subscribe to this podcast so you're the first to listen to each new episode that'll provide inspiration in your career? Just go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio if you use an Android device and click subscribe. I've also a free Kickstart Your Career audio course that you can find on my Facebook page at facebook.com/JaneCareerCoach. See you there.
Welcome to Jane Jackson Careers, a podcast that takes your career to the next level. Here's your host, Jane Jackson, author of Amazon Careers bestseller, Navigating Career Crossroads.
Welcome back to my careers podcast, where I interview fascinating professionals who've made amazing career changes. Now, today I have an exceptionally talented photographer, Eve Levine, who covers corporate and private events with panache. Eve was not always a photographer, though. She made an interesting transition from being a pattern cutter out of the London College of Fashion back in the day, and secured work after that as a youth and community worker before becoming a drugs and sexual health outreach worker in London. She was able to use her love of photography, videography, and acting, we'll find out about that too, to help disadvantaged youth before traveling the world and moving to Australia. That's when she threw herself into photography professionally, and I was fortunate to meet Eve at one of our LinkedIn local events with the LinkedIn ninja down under, Gillian Bullock. I loved Eve's incredible use of light and shade so much that I had to have her on the show to tell us her story. Now, what Eve really loves is to explore the stories of her clients to create the visual representation they need to reach their business goals. So tonight, let's find out the story behind Eve. So welcome to the show, Eve.
Hi, Jane. Thanks very much.
Well, it's lovely to have you on the show. And I was so impressed with all of the photography you were doing at both of our LinkedIn local events in Cronulla and Sydney. So it's amazing. Great images, Eve. Great images.
Thanks so much. It's always fun.
Yeah, that's right. So now what I want to do is find out the story behind Eve, because you do stories for everybody else visually. Mm-hmm. I want to do an audio story of you. So how about, just to kick us off, tell us a little bit about your career aspirations when you were a little girl.
Okay. Well, I suppose actually I found it really difficult to decide what I wanted to do, because I suppose I wanted to do so much and like so many different things. But school, I didn't really do so well at school, and I had to go back to college and do some exams, and so I had a bit of extra time to decide what to do. And you mentioned London College of Fashion, and it seemed very glamorous, but what I actually wanted to do, what I really thought I wanted to do at the time, was shop displays. I don't know if you've ever, or you have, you've been to London, and London at Christmas time particularly is beautiful. And
oh, it's amazing. Yeah, amazing, those Christmas displays.
Exactly. So I really wanted to do the displays in the shop fronts. That was what I was going to do. And I got a place at the London College of Distributive Arts. But I also got a place at the London College of Fashion, which just sounded far more glamorous. Well, I think I made a mistake there, because what I was doing was pattern cutting, and it was anything other than glamorous. So, yeah. I qualified, I got a job, and I realized I actually hated it. And it is a very technical job. And of course you get to make clothes, but I'm not a sewer. I hated the sewing part of it. I didn't have to sew when I was a pattern cutter, but you start making what we call twirls. And yeah, it just wasn't for me at the end of the day.
You know what's interesting is that it shows that your perceptions of what a career could be in fashion were not actually the reality, was it? And so I guess what you didn't do was do enough research and ask people who graduated from the London College of Fashion, what do you actually become once you graduate? Do you become a fashion designer or a pattern cutter, or what is it? You've got to do your time, you know, just to really
get on the shop floor. I had no idea what a pattern cutter even meant. So yeah, it was quite a surprise and shock. And not a good one.
You know, I mean, it's so true. I mean, I remember when I was in my teens, I had no idea as well. And I went for what sounded like, you know, a really interesting option. You know, originally, my first degree was in graphic design. And I thought, oh, now that sounds very glamorous. That sounds really interesting. But I'm not very good at it. So I actually got the degree, but I'm just absolutely hopeless. But so you got your qualification from the London College of Fashion, which sounds really good, Eve, okay? And then, so you became a pattern cutter. You thought, enough of that. Then what did you do?
Well, while I was working, I actually started volunteering at a local youth club as well, where a friend was working. And I just loved it. I loved the opportunities that it afforded me. I started doing courses, and then I just thought, you know what, I'm gonna do this full time. I found my family. I found my place where I could explore some difficulties that I was experiencing in my life, I suppose. So it became a vehicle for that. Really.
So does that mean like helping the youth and being in community work, you thought, okay, I've got some challenges. I can really relate to the people that I'm helping. Totally. And so by helping them, you also were helping yourself?
Yep.
Yeah. How wonderful.
I have always found that whatever I do is part of my own personal journey anyway. Mm-hmm. And so different aspects of that demonstrated through the type of work that I'm in. So the changes happen because the changes are happening for me and the needs that I require in my life. So to some degree, if that makes any sense. So youth and community work was fantastic. Yes, it was there to help others, as it were, but really I'm helping myself.
Yeah, you know what's so interesting is like very often we make decisions based on what our values are in life as well. And the things that we value most highly are usually the things that we don't have ourselves. You know, say, for example, if you've taken out a big mortgage because, you know, you want to have this house and suddenly you need to pay the mortgage, then suddenly money becomes a really top value for you. But if you're struggling in certain aspects of your life and you realize that, you know, I really wish I had help here, but because I understand it, I can help other people. It must have made you a really good youth and community worker.
Yeah, for me, the youth and community work situation was I actually found like I'm a mentor and somebody that really believed I had capability. Mm. And before I hadn't really come across I had no real ambition because I didn't believe I was capable of achieving. Like I said, I had failed at school quite spectacularly. I didn't actually believe that I had any real intelligence or capability to do anything. So being in youth and community work, I actually found that there were people that, one, were very accepting of who I was, just for who I was, and two, that actually thought I was very capable, which was, you know, something very new for me. That was nice.
You know, do you think there's just too much placed on academic qualifications now? Because, you know, if you felt that way when you were younger and, you know, because of grades or whatever, because people have got I mean, so much talent. And if you think of a lot of really successful entrepreneurs, you know, Richard Branson didn't finish high school, right? And so does it really matter? Because if you've got the aptitude, the attitude, the hard work, the great work ethic, I personally believe
in education. I think education is fantastic. Mm. I really would suggest that people learn, but I wouldn't say necessarily academic learning is the only method. As a youth and community worker, I actually studied and got a degree in informal and community education. So it's more about social education and it's about learning to be, find the resilience within yourself to enable you to deal with the different types of situations and relationships and the stuff that life throws at us, you know, and coping with that. So that's what I was saying. Like, part of that was me learning it as well as helping others to access that. So it's about reaching potential. And I think that's been my ongoing goal is about reaching potential and also with all the work that I will do is really been around that.
Yeah, and I think also helping people to understand themselves and bring out the best in them. I mean, I love it because I know the work that you do now is all about the stories behind the people as well. Yeah. And so when you are doing your youth and community work, it's getting to know those individuals who perhaps were struggling and finding out the stories and how they can overcome those self-limiting beliefs that sometimes are the stories that go round and round in our heads, right? Yeah. And so from youth and community work, then Eve, you became a drugs and sexual health outreach worker.
That was part and
parcel.
How
did that transition?
Well, it's not a transition. It's actually part and parcel because I was working in, I was a youth and community worker and I specialized in the area of drugs and sexual health education and I worked in a youth organization that was called Health Information Project, and it was all about harm minimalization. It's working with young people before they become problematic drug users or get involved in relationships which end in, you know, teenage or underage pregnancies, and so trying to avoid those things, that avoid sexually transmitted diseases and things like that. So it was education in those regards and helping young people to navigate their way through life and the changes that are happening to them, which are huge.
especially at that young sort of teenage years. Yep. So you must be naturally a really empathetic and caring professional.
I'm told so.
Well, you know, the funny thing is that, I mean, I met you a couple of weeks ago at an event and just instantly it's like, I like this woman. I mean, it's funny, isn't it? You know, sometimes when you just meet someone, you just like them for some reason. There's like, because you really exude warmth and authenticity. And now I realize it must be because of, you know, your background and your genuine empathy for helping people as well. So you're not just a photographer, which we'll find out more about later. It's, you know, it's that story behind what you're currently doing now, which is so interesting. Now, from what I know, okay, from being, you know, basically a community professional, you decided to travel.
I did.
Yes. So did you chuck it all in and think, okay, I'm just going to travel the world? What happened?
Well, I was reaching the age where I wouldn't have been able to do a working holiday visa. And my brother was living here in Australia and I wanted to visit. And I was kind of at a point in my life where I just thought, this is it. It's work, home, work, home, work, home. I didn't have kids. I was in a relationship, but it wasn't. We weren't going to be having children. And it just felt stuck. And I thought, I want to travel. And he didn't. So I just said, I've got to go. I've got to go and do something else. I can't keep doing this for the next, you know, God knows how many years. So I packed it all up. And, well, I applied for residency over here and I got my residency fairly quickly. I was kind of like, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And so be it. And it happened. So I was like, oh, I'm going.
And how long ago was that?
20 years ago.
20 years ago. Okay. Yeah, but still, brave move, though, because just think, if you're in a relationship and... the easy option would be to stay, and carry on, which is what a lot of people actually do. Mm-hmm. But you thought, no, it's not quite right. There's something that's missing in my life. I'm just going to do it. Let's just see if throw all the cards in the air and see if they fall into place. So it sounds like they fell into place. So now I know that you did a big sort of world tour of Asia and Europe and everywhere. And then you ended up in Australia. And so 20 years ago, back in the day when you arrived in Australia. So what happened once you got here? Because I don't know that part of the story.
Okay, yeah. Well, I travelled around Australia, first off, and I ended up working in Brisbane for a short while, and then I came to Sydney and started working in family planning down here. So as a youth educator down here in Asheville, in family planning in Asheville. And it was wonderful. I really enjoyed working there, but at the same time, there was part of my work. I was just basically a supply teacher going to schools and doing sex ed, which wasn't what I signed up for, to be honest. So I wanted to change, and that's when I decided to go travel again. Oh. It clears my mind.
I just want to travel. I know. I understand.
Really, I just want to travel the world. I love traveling. So I went to Mexico and I spent a few months in Mexico and then went back to the UK and stayed there for about 6 weeks as well and came back and just said, yep, I'm going to do this photography thing. And I applied for Sydney College of the Arts, part of Sydney Uni, when it was in Roselle, and got into there. And I suppose I did a visual arts degree and started teaching photography because I had the teaching background. Sorry.
Oh, is that your puppy? I like puppies.
Silly.
That's the beauty of podcasting. You never know what's going to come up. So we get a poodle barking. Lovely. Carry on.
I started my degree and went across the road and talked to the people at Sydney College, Community College, and said, I'd like to teach photography. Can I teach photography? And they said, sure. And I started teaching photography, so pretty much at the same time. And have been teaching with them for the last, oh gosh, I think 12, 15 years.
And so now as a professional photographer, when did you transition into professional photography as your business?
So it was a slow process with that. So I left my job at the family planning and, as I say, I went travelling and I just started temping. I was just doing hundreds and hundreds of temp jobs all over the place, which was absolutely fantastic way of meeting people and getting your head into businesses. And
networking.
It was the start of my networking career. I've become an ace networker. I just come along and I got Vistaprint postcards, drop them on their boards, and I'd talk to people. You know, I don't do this all the time. Made some great contacts as a result of that, people that have gone on to become my clients and referral partners. It was a really good way to go for me because I knew nobody. I knew very few people in Sydney. I didn't have the history of growing up here. I knew nothing about the industry that I was going into. I've become a photographer for businesses, it's really been an opportunity to see behind the doors of particular ways different professions work. So lawyers, HR. I actually, for the temping agency I worked, I was working as a temp. They also hired me to work for them.
Ah, well, there you go.
And I won Temp of the Year in 2009.
Well, how good is that? But, you know, to be quite honest, when you're temping, it's like short-term contract roles. And every time you go in and out of a role, you get to know new people. And more people get to know you. And if they know you and they get to like you and eventually they trust you to deliver whatever it is that they need, then, of course, if they know that your photography skills are pretty good and you talk about it so passionately, then it's like, oh, let's give Eve that's a right. go. And then, oh, Eve does really good work. And then you get more and more work. And so it's always through the referrals.
Gone on as well, of course.
Yeah, of course. Well, that's so good. And because, you know, honestly, I mean, going through all of the photos that you did for us for the LinkedIn local events, it's like you really captured, I like the colors that you use. And, you know, just the expressions on people's faces, it's when it comes to photography, it's, you know, it's really capturing the moment so that people can feel it rather than the happy snaps. Like I take photos all the time, but it's with my iPhone. It's like, it's very posed because I only have one good look. I've got one angle, you know, catch me on another angle. I don't look any good, but you really capture the moment where it's like you get that, you know, that emotion that comes through as well, which is really special as a photographer, isn't it?
Well, you do have to be a bit patient. And the one thing that for upcoming for photographers and events, you have to wait for the moment. You've got to watch people. And so you're a bit of a stalker, just standing there in the corner with a long lens and just waiting for them to have the right expression. And, of course, now it's digital. We're kind of lucky in that we can take a few of that person just in case they blink, which happens, or somebody behind them is doing something which doesn't appear so good. So you've got to kind of, you watch, you've got a frame as you're watching through the frame here today, and you've got to be looking all around it.
And so you focus on corporate as well as private events, right?
Oh, not so much private, actually. I did in the beginning. I was doing weddings and family portraits and babies, but not so much anymore, occasional weddings.
And so now your focus is purely on the corporate events, whether they're large or small events, conferences, networking events, things like that.
Yeah, event photography and portrait photography for businesses. So for people's profiles, for their LinkedIn profiles, for their websites, for blogs, for their media, their social media campaigns, just helping them to tell their stories and helping them to define what that story actually is visually. And we're doing events, and I'm building the events side so that we can get more people involved so that the business can actually grow and stay viable. Because that's obviously important to be here in the next few years. We need to be very viable and get other people involved, basically.
Actually, it really is a challenge as an entrepreneur, such as you are, to build your business and develop that reputation and get the repeat business and then the referrals moving forward. That's the biggest challenge, isn't it, for business owners?
It is. Yeah. It is. I think it's the biggest challenge for most businesses. So,
I know. I mean, certainly for my business, you know, I've got to market it. And I hate sales. I don't like sales. I don't like being a sales-oriented professional because I'm a career coach, so I just like to deliver. But I need to do my marketing activities in order to, you know, generate that interest in what I may want to do. And then it's through the repeat business. The repeat business is through delivering something that's of value. And you deliver something of value because, like I say, I only met you a few weeks ago, and then you delivered amazing quality results. And, you know, it wasn't just a one-off because the next event, it was incredible photography as well. And you remember in that last event at Lot One in Sydney, and the colours in that venue were challenging because it was quite dark. And then they had all the neon and the purples and everything. But you managed to capture it so that it looks good. Looks really good. And I think it's really hard when you have a lot of artificial light because I tend to prefer the natural light as well. So that was good. So say if someone wanted to become a professional photographer, as you are, what advice would you give them?
I would advise them to, as you said earlier, the research. The research is really, really important. So, yes, coming out of school and going into the fashion, et cetera, and not doing my research was really, I knew no better. When I got older and changing, you know, really late in life to become a professional photographer, I immersed myself. I got involved with photography groups. So there's like there's the ACMP and now there's the AIPP, which is the Australian Institute for Professional Photographers. And there was a student group. It was for emerging, and they called them young photographers. And I said, please drop the young because it doesn't suit me. But anyway, emerging is fine. Emerging photographers. And we had a competition, and I got involved on the committee to work towards making the annual competition happen. So I did that for a few years, still connected with the people that were involved in that now. And I built my connections in the photographic industry itself. Because I needed to know what was happening. I needed to know what other people were doing, and I needed to know how to price myself was really important. And I needed to develop my voice. And it's an ongoing journey. I don't think it's it doesn't stop. You know, you're constantly learning, and those things about what you're talking about marketing, that has been one of the hugest learning curves, and also defining the actual target market, the clients that you're going to work with. So as I said, it changed. It's moved around. And so I started networking. I started going to meetups regularly, found out about BNI, and just heard people saying, have you heard of BNI? And I was like, what's this BNI? Getting onto Google and going, typing it in and saying, what's this? Inviting myself along. I didn't have anyone inviting me along. I mean, they're talking about it, but no one actually invited me. And this was about 5 years ago now. And just getting involved in that. And that was a huge learning curve as well. So immersing myself in the actual industry, and then immersing myself in the business. And I would suggest that people do something like that in what the area that they want to go into, connect with other photographers, learn what they're doing, and not to copy, but to understand, and to understand the marketplace. And because I came in at the time when it was changing from film to digital, I think as an older person, I was actually at an advantage, because the older film photographers, they had to really change their business models. And I think some, you know, found that quite difficult, and not necessarily, they don't sit easy with it. So, yeah, I think I was at an advantage in that regard. And, of course, now the younger ones that have never had film, I've got the advantage of the fact that I used to use film. Yeah. And so it's a bit different.
Yeah, I think having come from an era before everything went digital, and you really had to have a good eye and a good sense of timing as a photographer, that really is key, isn't it? I'm thinking now, just, you know, as you were talking, just this image came to my mind of, you know, the Vietnam War, and that amazing image of that young girl who is covered in napalm.
Yes.
It was in the moment. There's nothing digitally enhanced. It was impossible to recreate that one image.
Yes.
And that's what the old school style of photography was. It was, you had to be there, you had to have good timing, you had to get the lighting right. Technically, you had to be just, you can't enhance it. It's just there. Yeah. And it happens. And now the world of photography has actually changed quite a lot because of social media and people having their iPhones or their Androids or whatever with amazing phones, and they can capture the moment. So you get a lot of that instant stuff that happens on Twitter and Instagram, but you still need professional photographers who can take clear shots that tell the story. And I think the old school style of training gives you that good eye, doesn't it? Yeah, you need to have a good eye for design.
I believe that's true. Yes, you need to have a good eye to capture the moment, and the moment has to happen, I suppose. Yeah, I mean, film did have things do change regardless, in terms, sorry, I've lost my chain of thought there. There was a change that you could make with film, because you go into a dark room and you can dodge and burn, and you can make things brighter or lighter. And there was photo manipulation before digital age. So those things have happened and did happen. There's a lot of propaganda that was around as well, not that specific image that you're talking about. But things in the film era, they were manipulated as well. There have been a lot of things that have been manipulated. But yes, having an eye for detail, I think that the people coming into professional photography, if that's what they want to do. What I think you need to develop is the eye for the area that you're going to be working within. And of course, photojournalism is what you're talking about with the image that you mentioned. And it's different to say like wedding photography or babies photography. And there's different genres within those. Some people like realism, some people like humor, some people like romanticism, and you know, there's different styles and genres within styles within the particular arenas. And I'm working with with businesses that are building their brand, and the small to medium sized businesses in that are developing their stories.
And so what's your methodology now? Say if you took on a new client and they're building their brand and your brief is to help them to brand themselves, what is the process that you would take them through so that they know that, you know, okay, so Eve is on the case, she's looking after us now. What do you do to get their story out to the masses?
So we start with knowing exactly what they are trying to achieve. We want to find out what their aim is, who their audience is, and where the images are going. Those things are key.
And so there are a lot of things that you need to think about when you're trying to capture someone's image. Say for something as, well, I mean, I think it's simple. It probably isn't simple, but something as important as a LinkedIn profile photo, what would be the key elements that you aim to capture when taking someone's LinkedIn profile photo, for example?
So for LinkedIn profiles, I always suggest people keep them as simple as possible. And the reason being is because you end up being very tiny. Whenever your picture follows you, you're going to be very tiny. So if we have too much information in the background, other people in the background, noise, in, you know, just it's going to detract from you. You're not going to be very clear. The reason that we have, and because I'm working with businesses that are networking, that are building their businesses, it's about them going out and going and meeting other people. They need to be recognizable when they go into a cafe most of the time. And that's their reason. So we kind of figure out what it is they want their LinkedIn image to be about. I always suggest keep it simple and plain as possible. So the background may just be a very neutral grey, white, black background. Then it's more about their personality and how they express themselves visually, smile.
You know what I've noticed on a lot of people's LinkedIn profiles, they take a happy snap. And they crop out their mates at a wedding or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they put themselves up. What's your opinion on that?
Well, look, at the end of the day, they will be noticed and they will be seen and they'll be recognised and that will be okay. What they won't recognise is that people have already decided they're not truly committed to their business. Mm. If it's a business. We all look and make assumptions as soon as we see somebody, from their age, from their race, from their weight, the colour of their hair, all of those things. We make assumptions. Now, that doesn't mean we have to be somebody else, because we don't. We want to be exactly who we are, but the most polished version that we can put out there is the best thing that we can do on a, particularly for a LinkedIn profile. Because when we look and see other people, we don't even realize that we've made assumptions. And so that's exactly what they're doing to us as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the important thing is really you've got to be true to yourself. But if you're going to put yourself up on LinkedIn, because it's a professional networking site, it's not social. It's project your most professional image that you want people to remember you by as well. And I think, you know, there was one LinkedIn image that I used for some of my workshops, and it's this man, and he's bending down and he's patting two lions somewhere or other, but the image, it's out of focus. You can't see his face. You know that they're two lions because of the kind of shape, but it's on LinkedIn. And I use that and I think, what is this? The man is not a zookeeper.
I suppose not everybody actually is using LinkedIn to its full potential. And I think if you're choosing and you're needing and wanting and can see the power and use of LinkedIn, then use it properly. If you don't and you don't want to, fine, that's okay. But don't expect it to work for you as well as it could if you don't make the effort. I've seen you've got your 14-day challenge coming up as well. And so if you... You need to be able to show exactly who you are and what you're planning to do and who you want to connect with in as genuine and as clear a fashion as you possibly can. And your image is part of that. So every image you put up there as well should kind of fall into the standards that you've set for yourself. Because, you know, whenever I've gone past a lamppost which has a sign on it saying, you know, mortgages, phone this number, it's cardboard piece of paper. I'm like, seriously? Does anyone phone? Has anyone ever phone? And that's what a bad LinkedIn profile is about. It's like, it's not going to be taken seriously. You are going to be judged whether we like it or not. I don't believe in us judging each other, but at the same time, it's exactly what we do.
You know what, Eve? It also means that you are not just a photographer. You are a branding specialist and you are a coach, all combined into one.
I try to be the coach.
Yeah. But that way, so you can help people tell the story that they really want to get out. And I think that takes us full circle back to what it is that you want, and that is to explore the stories of your clients to create a visual representation that they need to reach their business goals. So I reckon if you need to do that, if you want to get your branding just right, then you need Eve Levine. Now, Eve, if people want to find out more about you, where do they find you?
They can find me on the web. They can find me on LinkedIn.
So and your website is?
Yeah, it's evelevinephotography.com.au. And my name is spelled very strangely, of course. It's always so special. Eve of a Y, so it's Y-V-E. And then Levine, L-A-V-I-N-E, photography.com.au.
Yep. And what about Twitter? What's your Twitter handle?
Levine Photo.
Levine Photo. Now, what I'll have is on my website at janejacksoncoach.com, where this podcast will be posted, I will have all of your links. So in the show notes, you'll find Eve's links if you want to get in contact with Eve. Because honestly, I love her photos. She's such a nice person, as you can tell from this podcast interview as well. And so if you want someone who can help to brand you, tell the true story behind you and really get the best out of you, then I think Eve is someone that you really need to speak with. So thank you so much, Eve. It's been such a pleasure talking to you. You've had such an interesting career journey, and because you've lived life and you've gone through some tough stuff, you've helped people who've gone through tough stuff, you've done your travel, you understand people and the ups and downs of life as well, that I think that's why you're a really good storyteller when it comes to the visual representation. So I'm very lucky to have had you on this show. Thank you so much, Eve.
Thanks, Jane. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
And we'll see you at the next LinkedIn local event.
Absolutely.
Thank you so good. Much. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
If you'd like to find out how coaching can help you, visit janejacksoncoach.com, where not only will you be able to listen to other fascinating interviews from professionals who've made amazing career changes, you'll also be able to download some free ebooks and guides on how to manage your career effectively.
You've been listening to Jane Jackson Careers. Sign up to receive regular career advice at janejacksoncoach.com.
If you enjoyed this episode of Your Career Podcast, I invite you to check out my Career Success Program at thecareersacademy.online. The Career Success Program is the original program that uniquely provides 24/7 on-demand career support and fortnightly live career coaching sessions to keep you on track to reach your career goals. It is the essential resource for anyone who wants to manage their career effectively, make a career change, and land the job they'll love. Whether you're in exploration mode or seeking a new career direction and need help to make it a reality, the Career Success Program is for you. Not only do you get access to my step-by-step roadmap to navigate your career crossroads, my extensive training library and exclusive members-only discounts and tools, you'll also become part of my supportive community of professionals who will help you with feedback, encouragement, and advice. All this and more makes the Career Success Program the number one place to be for anyone looking to start, manage, and grow their career. Check it out and join me at thecareersacademy.online.